Well, we're taking a journey for the next 3 hours and maybe a bit more tomorrow. It's going to be a very interesting journey, and I'm going to take you a bit through the history, because in understanding physics, in understanding black holes, even understanding feedback, you need to know the history, right? I brought two texts to get yourself fully organized, just to try to demonstrate the challenge that you're going to experience. When I was about your age, maybe a bit older, and decided to go into astronomy and astrophysics and choose that as a discipline, there was very few opportunities. Most universities did not have the means by which to study this area. Number one, in those days, you needed a telescope. How many universities can afford to build a $10 million telescope? Very few. So you had to be very selective in the universities that you sort of choose. This is different now, because universities are collaborating, governments collaborated, and they build telescopes. For example, you ever visit Hawaii, you look at the tops of the mountains over there, a volcano, hopefully they're not erupting, you'll notice that there's a variety of telescopes, all shared. Canada, France, Hawaiian telescope, and it's shared by these different countries. And allows universities, even universities here, to have access to those universal observatories. So you choose the profession, you go to your bookstore, and you sit there and say, I'm taking general relativity, I would like the textbook. And you go to the shelf, and you get the textbook on general relativity. This is not a complete story. Yeah. Not to mention, drain your pocketbook. So I'm going to give you an idea. What we're talking about is daunting. And I'm going to try to put you through this book in a couple of hours.
Thank you.
Well, I'll skip a couple of pages. And I'll add some general graphics, because you know what? I want us to graphics. Right? And that's the whole process. Now, what I did do, because I had some people ask me, what is the best book to get? They say, I'm a high school student, I'm pretty good in math, I know how to go for help when I need some more help with math, I'm not afraid to read the internet, I'm not afraid to study on my own. What's a great book to get for studying gravity, general relativity, black holes? And there's a lot of what I call pocket science books, which are cool to read, but I think you guys want something with more meat. Yeah. Something with a bit of a bite to it. This is the book I recommend. I'll have it up here, and I'll put the author and the title and ISBN number on there. It's a great book. It's a book that assumes that you have some level of math, high school level of math, and if you goes into university, you can easily search that stuff on the internet. But they have some nice examples, and they have some equations that you can work with. And they have some examples, which they do, and examples for you to work on. It's a beautiful, beautiful book that would take you deeper than I'm going to take you here as well. It's a great way to get an appreciation for what I'm talking about. And keep in mind, this book is just the beginning chapter. Because as you go through this journey, you'll notice that things have changed. Go back about 30 years, in the 70s time frame, and you would ask, oh, let's say 100 astronomers, astrophysicists, do you believe in black holes? I mean, really believe in black holes, so that you work in black holes and you work. You'd probably get 10 people to raise their hands, and up to 10, five of them would be looking around to see if they'd be looking at it. It was back then, was a mathematical presentation, a consequence of this thing called general relativity and some of the solutions of what we call Einstein's field equations. Now, I got 100 astronomers, astrophysicists. I asked the same question. How many of you believe in black holes? About 98 of them would raise their hands. Two would still say, promise will still be down. There are people who do not believe in black holes the way that we're presenting them here. They know there's something, but it's not what we call black holes and the dynamics that go along with, the strangeness that goes along with that. So this is the journey we're going to take. I'm going to start from the beginning. We'll work through, and I'll try to bring in as much history to make it exciting, to get a feeling of where this thing came from. And then, when we end, you will have a good, solid understanding. I want you to walk out of here with the spark to sit there and say, I want to read some more. Maybe I want to get this. Maybe I want to go on the internet and Google black holes, start reading some of this stuff, and find out more information. That's what I'd like you to do. Tomorrow, after the break, Jeannie's going to come, and she's going to be talking about aspects of this. So certain things I'm going to leave for her, I don't want to take away her bravado. So certain things I'll skip over relatively quickly, because I know that she's going to take you there a bit later on. So she wants an hour to talk about that. But are you guys ready for the journey?
Yes.
All right. So I put this together. We'll see how this black hole goes out. I have to thank a lot of people. I've got a lot of graphics here, and a lot of graphics came from companies, corporations like NASA, ESA, and different organizations. So there's a lot of people's work in here to make the presentation at least exciting, and we'll cross our fingers and hope that we don't have a technology failure, right? Here we go. Great definition, a huge, great, enormous thing, like nothing, a huge, big, well, like, I don't know, like an enormous, big, nothing. I think that's the best definition of a black hole. Right? It says it all there. So where did this idea of black holes, and even the term black holes, we'll talk about where that name came from. But initially, a young man, John Mitchell, born in 1783, in around, 1800s, scientists back then were called natural philosophers. A natural philosopher was an expert on everything. To study medicine, you had to study astronomy. To study astronomy, you had to study medicine. You had to be a lawyer. You didn't have. You became what they called a natural philosopher. So these were the Renaissance men back then. These are the people that took the time to study. Now, what Mitchell did was, during his readings, he'd read Newton's laws, and he understood the properties of Newton's laws, right? The force of gravity. And he sat there and said, well, that's kind of nice. I've got a force of gravity. I've got a large object. I know the equations. I can look it up in my transcript. And I sat there and made a large enough mass. And I shrink down the radius far enough. Should I not produce a body whose gravitational force was so strong that light, deemed as a particle back then, did not have the energy, did not have the speed to get off the sun star. So what would happen, here's my demonstration tool, one candy, my photon. So the ground was so dense, the gravity field so strong, that the poor photon would go up and come back down. Makes sense. You know, if it's strong enough gravity, light was a particle, and all particles were subject to the gravitational field, that this would occur. That you would have this dark star. Why do you think he called it a dark star? Yeah, exactly. If I'm above the photons, the little light never hit my eye and come back down. So for me, it seems to be dark. Now, with me and my rocket ship, I can still go and visit. I can slide into those photons. And then I can actually see stuff happening. I can probably see a little photon. I wouldn't see the photons with my eye. But you could imagine it coming close. Oh, see the photons. I see the information of the star. Right? Very interesting. Fun with math. That's what they were. Fun with mathematics. What happens if? Now, the novelty lost interest in about 1803, because yesterday you saw, as part of the demonstration, that Thomas Young had shown that light behaved like a wave. And it behaved like a wave, they didn't know how to fit it in. And so the particle component of light disappeared, and we now thought light was a wave-like object. And therefore, Newton's laws didn't really affect it, and so the full concept of dark stars faded like a dark star. Yes?
How did this process of the gravity getting the photon back to this body?
They just figured out the escape velocity. I'm going to have you work on that in a second. Good question.
Because at some time the photon would stop, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, yes, but for them they didn't care about it. They didn't know how. We're talking about that time. It was a particle. They really did not understand too much about it. They didn't understand as much as we know about that it cannot do what it just did. For them, because they had no way of measuring it. They just had the basic knowledge of the time. So for them, the photon was deemed just like my candy. Yeah. Alrighty. Oh, you've got a calculator. Oh, you've got a whiteboard. Oh, calculator escape velocity. So These are two equations. Can you read the numbers? 6.67 times 10 to the minus 11, 5.57 times 10 to the 24, and R equals 6.37 times 10 to the, I think it's 6. Yes. You and your Marie glasses. All right. So
times 10 to the what?
Which one?
Last
one, 6.
No, the middle one,
mass. Oh, mass, 24. Last one, 10 to the 6. This is what they had. You have different levels of math. You should be able to see all I want you to do. We have minus 11, 24, and 6.
Here we go.
And by the way, that object, the corner, is here. Okay, anybody got any answers? Okay, give you some more time. The nice thing about gravity is you've got time to use. Did you notice how the mass of the, let's put it in quotes, the photon, I put that in quotes, the mass of the photon, in quotes, cancels out? We're not there yet. We're not even. Einstein wasn't even a football yet. So we're basically using the same stuff that we showed you. So we got any answers? I'm seeing something of your, I'm seeing a lot of students, a lot of one point somethings, right? Something along that I changed to units of kilometers per second, whatever units that you had, you probably were gaining, you had something, I'm looking around, it's staying with the same order of magnitude depending on the units you chose. One thing physicists like to do, good work, is dimensional analysis of units inside the belt. So this is the escape velocity for Earth. If you could run at that speed, right, you're leaving your planet,
going on a journey.
What is R? Use the same equation. When I give you the velocity, that's 3 times 10 to the 8 meters per second. Same equation. I'm giving you what V is. You calculate what R is. I'm telling you V is 3 times 10 to the 8. Again, I'm just using this nice little simple Newtonian balancing equation. And these are the questions that they were asking themselves. What if? What if? Even if they didn't have the calculators that you had, they would be sitting there looking at, doing it the hard way, seeing if anybody had a table of logs, they could use a log table, right? Trying to invent a device called slide rule. How far away from the surface would it be if it can be that? So you're actually calculating that barrier, right? For Earth. At 3 times the game. Yes, up there. So as you guys are working it through, so you can get something along that about 8.8 millimeters. You could have had it, there we go, we could have it in centimeters, you could have put it in meters if you want, but 8.8 millimeters. Yeah. Right? So that's how much Earth kind of squashed into to produce this. So we'll make a note, just make a mental note of that number, about 8.8 millimeters. Along comes Einstein. And by this time, he had already produced what Damien talked about yesterday, his special theory of relativity, and all the equations that go along with that. If some of you are familiar with the length contraction, time dilation, what we call the Lorentz corrections done to particles and things moving at velocities, some velocity very close to the light. Now, what Einstein did is he was trying to take his special or his restricted version and add the ability for acceleration to be involved in it. Do you remember what Damien said, that everything was in a local plane, constant velocity? Now we're going to accelerate. What happens if things start to speed up or slow down? The real world. How could he put these things in there? And it took a while for Einstein to get his head around this. And he realized that what we call the equivalence principle, that in this situation, there is no way to distinguish between being in an accelerated frame or in a gravity well. So in other words, If I put you in a box, and you cannot see outside this box, you do some little measurements. You take your little candy, you toss the candy in the air, and you follow the nice arc of the candy, right? You do little experiments, and you realize that, you make the assumption that you're sitting on the earth. But unbeknownst to you, somebody could have taken your little box, used quantum teleportation, you're in deep space, they stick on a rocket underneath your elevator, your box, and they accelerate the engine, you accelerate at exactly the same rate that you feel on Earth. Now, if you didn't know that was happening, you would still take your candy. It would still come down because the candy is not accelerating as you are. You're eating it as it comes down. So every experiment that you did, and I'm going to put the word local. Physicists use talk about local frames, which is things too. Every experiment that you did would show you could not determine which was which. Now, sometimes you sense this, you've actually felt this. If you've ever been on a train, looking out a window, right? And you don't feel the train jostle just a bit, okay? Stop the station, and you just look, and you see everything go by. For a fraction of a second, you don't know if you're the one who's moving, or somebody else is sliding across. This instantaneous moment, so you look around and then have logic to determine what's occurring here. With this idea in mind, this equivalence, he was able to put forward a direction that he wanted to take. He knew exactly how he had to go. So I've got a little animation here. Okay. So the elevator is going down. Is the elevator going down? Or what's happening?
He's going to go down.
There is no gravity.
But there is no gravity, so where else could he be?
In space.
He's still in the elevator.
Spaceship.
We turn on the engine. The bottom of the spaceship has now met him and is accelerating. And so he's feeling exactly the same thing you feel as if he was on Earth. Now, this thought process gave him all the hints that he needed and the direction. Now, the problem is, it's great to have an idea, but how do you put the mathematics around this idea? It took about 10 years to put the mathematics around the idea. But something amazing came out of this. Now, I will be talking a bit about space-time in a second, but I want to give us a unique gut feeling. Einstein has got, when he's talking about his general theory of relativity, when we all talk about general theory of relativity, there's two components. There's the spatial component, and there's what we call a time component, or a temporal component. We put them together, and this was the big piece. We put them together and created a component which we call space-time. Now, the spatial component that had to produce the same results that we see on the animation is very similar to a problem I gave you a couple of days ago. Remember I put a circle on the board?
Right?
It was a hot plate, cold in the middle. And once these little ants, and I had my favorite ant, Albert Einstein, right? They had a ruler that grew as the temperature grew. And I asked you to do a couple of things. Assume that this is my hot plate. Just assume this is point A, and maybe this is point B, and someplace over here is cooler and it's farther and further away from the center of my hot plate. Anybody figure out what from the end the shape of the shortest line would be?
Circle perpendicular to our.
So you want to go from here to here, maybe the center is over here. It would be a circle, but it would be a, you're on the right track. Yeah. Some form of an arc. Some part of an arc. Well, there's a lot of dynamics that go along with that perpendicular to the center point. But all I wanted you to get out of that was it wasn't a straight line, it was an arc. And then you probably tried to draw a square, good luck. Good. And actually, we're very symmetrical, put it around the middle, but you just pick a spot for a square. Good luck. And remember, I give you a hint, go straight, turn 90 degrees, go straight, some distance for 90 degrees. You wouldn't be where you ended up with. Very interesting. And if you drew a triangle, you had some unusual properties. So the properties of this hot plate are the same properties of a curved space. You're exactly the same properties if you lived on a sphere. So that was the first thing Einstein had to get his head around, was dealing with the geometry of what needed to take place for our animation to work. The second property was time. Now you've already experienced time, right? The special theory of relativity has all these strange equations. What happens if somebody moves fast? What happens to the clock on the object? It goes what, faster?
Slower.
So move the clock, runs slower. Right? Faster runs slower. And there's a whole bunch of ancient favorite things, paradoxes, and those that can do some reading inside there. Well, Einstein was thinking about being inside his box. And he sat there and says, okay, if I'm inside my box, and my box is accelerating up, so visualize the box is moving up. We're in the rocket ship, the engines are on, and it's moving up. And I have somebody at the top of the elevator and somebody at the bottom of the elevator. Okay, so they're going to do an experiment. They're going to send candies up every second, or they can send flashes of light every second. It doesn't matter. They're going to send some information every second. So the guy on the ground is going to say, okay, my watch, every second I'm going to send up the next piece of information. Get the picture? So every second, there goes the second, oh, there goes the next one. And the guy at the top of the elevator is going to be trying to catch. Maybe it's his lunch. Who knows? Right? So the guy at the top is trying to catch, the guy at the bottom is tossing up. But we're in an elevator that's accelerating up, or nowadays we say a rocket ship that's accelerating up. Got a feeling of this? Here we go. The guy at the top says, okay, rocket engines are going, up we're accelerating. Here comes my first candy flash. What's going to happen to the next candy? He's going to wait a second. See if you can think it out. Remember, on the ground, on the bottom, it's being pushed up. But as soon as I let go, it's not touching the elevator, so it's going at whatever velocity I sent it. But what's happening to the top of the elevator relative to the candy?
It's shrinking.
They're not shrinking. Don't overthink it. It's going up. If it goes up, it has to go a bit. The poor candy has to travel a bit further, and therefore it's going to take a bit longer. And so the guy at the top sits there and says, well, I'm at the top. He's supposed to be sending it every second, but it's coming, let's say, every 2 seconds. So his clock is running slower because my clock's every second. It's coming up from him every 2 seconds. So his clock must be running slower. very interesting conceptual piece there. And you can reverse the process. Have it going down, the guy sending it down, and see if you can understand the huge, huge dynamic change that takes place. That the elevator is the same as being on the ground. Remember that I'm on the ground, I'm giving acceleration. There's an equivalence between the two. I'm a laser pointer here. This and this are the same. So if it runs slower, it must be running slower on the ground. So the closer you are to the ground, the slower the clock runs. And that's the temporal component of general relativity. Now, here's a tough question. Let's assume I'm going to toss this candy back there. And by your props on the ground, right, if the candy has to come to you in exactly maybe a second and a half. Here's the problem. Here's the challenge I want to give to you. How do I toss this candy so that you will receive it in a second and a half from down here? Keep it in mind that as soon as the candy goes in the air, it's moving away from the ground, so its clock starts to run faster. But to move it up high, I have to throw it faster. But if I throw it faster, its speed is going to increase. It's going to increase. So you get all these unusual things that you're playing with. So the question becomes, how do I throw this candy so it lands to you in exactly a second and a half when you're balancing not only the speed difference between the heights, but the speed difference in motion, special in the general relativity? What is the shape of the path that I have to throw it?
It works out.
Who's ready to catch? Somebody raise their hand. I'm going to toss it. I'm going to nice toss over there. Here it comes. This might make it, but the arc that made it through there is a parabola. It's exactly the same thing that Newton showed with his laws of gravity. Very interesting. Einstein knew he was on the right track.